The Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. It takes a certain kind of brave to run a business. We see it, we back it.
Well, sticking with internet wranglings, our next guest is a big believer that arguments are a great thing, but as long as we can do them properly. He says we need to be taught how to argue. Ian Leslie is the author of Conflicted: Why Arguments Are Tearing Us Apart and How They Can Bring Us Together. Ian, let's start with how we should argue. You draw on fairly tense situations for the book, like hostage negotiators and interrogators, and you think we can learn how to argue from some of the techniques that they use. Like what techniques, for instance?
One of the important ones, for instance, is connect. First, connect. And what I mean by that is one of the mistakes that we make in a disagreement is that we get to the disagreement too quickly, before we've established some sort of human connection. In other words, we establish that our relationship is bigger than just the thing we're about to disagree with. And you can do that in a number of ways, right? It might be that you just kind of compliment the person, or it might be that you show them some sort of respect. You just need to let them know, I'm okay with you, right? So hostage negotiators, for instance, they're trained, when they pick up the phone to the hostage taker, they don't get straight into it. They don't say, okay, right, how are we going to get these hostages out, or how are we going to solve this crisis? Because often they're just talking to somebody who's in some terrible crisis. Maybe they're trying to commit suicide. They are trained to spend the first part of the conversation just saying things like, look, I just want to let you know that we are all really impressed by the way you've been handling this. I appreciate the fact that you've kept things under control, and I hope you're feeling okay, etc. Or take interrogators. Interrogators don't walk into the room, or the good ones do not walk into the room and say, right, you need to tell me what you know. They walk into the room and they say, so I would like to hear from you your story. Like, tell me why you're here. I'm interested. They build a rapport with the suspect before they get into the tough part of the conversation. So we can all do that, you know, when possible, you know, establish the relationship first and put the conversation on a kind of level footing first, and then get into it. Don't get to the disagreement too fast.
In the book, you give some examples of people who disagreed, who had fairly regular dust-ups and benefited from it. And one example you give is the Wright brothers, who invented the airplane.
Yeah, I mean, the Wright brothers, we all know that they invented the airplane. But, you know, when you read about them, their achievement just becomes even more phenomenal than you imagine. This is the early part of the 20th century. You've got people around the world, experts, academics, technologists, working on this problem of manned flight and feeling that, you know, they were getting kind of close to an answer. And it's the Wright brothers who crack it. The Wright brothers didn't have any institutional qualifications whatsoever. They had no higher education. The Wright brothers ran a bike shop. But these two amateur guys, you know, beat the world to this incredible breakthrough. And a big part of the reason that they were able to do so is that they were incredibly good at arguing. It used to unnerve people who got anywhere near them, just to see them kind of really going hammer and tongs at each other, because they would assume they were falling out, but they weren't. They were incredibly close. And they would just interrogate each other's point of view really ruthlessly and mercilessly, and then the other one would come back and say, well, what about this? And then, no, what about this? So people walking in the street past their bike shop would hear them kind of shouting at each other. So they were very vigorous and very passionate in their disagreement, but actually it would kind of reinforce their closeness and enabled them to make enormously fast progress on solving this problem. I think they're quite inspirational.
Was that just in their personalities, or was that something they learned or were taught, or that they appreciated the value of having an exchange like that?
It partly came from their father, who used to, you know, at the dinner table, used to kind of set up these arguments about the matters of the day, almost like the kind of old scholastic tradition where they would say, you take this side of the argument, you take the other side, and then let's get into it.
Another example, somewhat distant from the Wright brothers, is the world of rock and roll, famous for band dust-ups and bands falling out and never returning. That's the breakup because they've had a row. But you talk about the Rolling Stones, and they were quite capable of clearing the air.
Yeah. I mean, I just think the world of rock bands, you can think about them as microcosms of any business, any workplace, really. You know, you've got a group of talented people who all have their own specialisms. So that's almost like, that's like a startup, right? It's like a company. So actually, you can draw lessons from which bands have been good at creating a kind of culture of good culture of disagreement versus those that haven't. There was a rock critic and biographer and a guy who used to be in a band himself provoked me on this line of research when he said, you know, having watched and been around rock bands for 30, 40 years, I know that the bands that stay together and successful and are successful are not the ones who high-five each other after every gig and hug each other all the time. Those ones, I've seen them come and go and they kind of fall by the wayside. The ones that succeed are the ones that really know what each person is good at and then absolutely don't mind having it out with each other and having strong points of view and disagreeing and then moving forward. There's a story about the Rolling Stones in the Netherlands on tour. Mick picks up the phone. Mick is with Keith. He picks up the phone and says, "Charlie, I need my drummer up here." And this is really kind of late at night, I think, kind of in the small hours. They just wanted Charlie to join them for a drink, I think. Charlie kind of doesn't reply. He's a bit of grumpy. And a few minutes later, there's a knock on Mick's door. And there is Charlie Watts, fully dressed in his suit, perfectly turned out as always. And when the door opens, he punches Mick in the face and he says, "Don't ever call me your drummer again." You know, as I say, I'm not advising that people to get into to fist fights to express their point of view, but I think it is interesting that A, that Charlie did that, B, that it was a way of levelling the kind of the dynamics of the band when he felt it was getting a bit out of hand and he was just being treated as someone's drummer. So, I talk about them. I look at the Beatles and REM. And the interesting thing is they all have different styles of handling disagreement, right? There's no kind of particular one way to do it, but it is something that you have to come to terms with.
Still learning from the Rolling Stones. Ian Leslie, author of Conflicted. Thank you very much for joining us on the program.